what we might find unsettling is being around so many people who are dead.
Yeah.
How do you find it?
I don't find it unsettling at all. It's very quiet. The living are really unpredictable and really quite noisy, even just in something like breathing. You can hear them. You don't have anything to worry about from the deceased. They are just still. So it is quite a calm and peaceful environment.
I'm Georgie Vesti, and this is Dead Honest, a podcast where we talk honestly about death. Anita, whose voice you just heard, is an anatomical pathology technologist. And when I decided to do an episode about people who work in mortuaries or morgues, I wasn't expecting to meet someone like her. I was imagining someone quite dry, quite detached, but not a bit of it. Anita is passionate about her work and brings as much care and dedication to the dead as any nurse does to the living. I should warn you up front, our conversation is pretty confronting at times, and that's because we discuss her work with babies and young children. It's a tough listen, but I wanted to show you the depth of her compassion. I'm Georgie Vesti, and this is Dead Honest. Talk me through what it's like when you open those doors. What would I find if I was to walk in there with you? What would I be hit by first, do you think?
I think probably the cold. When you get into our mortuary, it's open to the elements, really, in a sense. And we've got just a shutter at the back that our funeral directors use. So it can be quite a cold environment. And it's got a sort of tinny smell. It's not an unpleasant smell. It's just kind of metallic.
And is that where the bodies are stored as well?
Yeah.
So tell me, when a body arrives at the mortuary, what happens?
They come to us and are transferred onto one of our trays. We undress them as part of the procedure. We check their pockets for any property. If somebody's been found on the street, it's possible that they've got keys, a wallet, mobile phone. You know, they might have jewellery on. There's all sorts that people come in with, even down to dog leads and poo bags and, you know, just random things that you have in your pockets. We have to examine everything that's there. And then we'll do a height and weight measurement of the patient for their post-mortem if they're likely to have one. They're wrapped in a sheet so that no part of their body's exposed, and they're popped into our fridge space.
And they're put into a sheet for what reason? For dignity or...?
Yeah, and it helps protect the skin. It sounds awful, but if you put like a chicken in the fridge and didn't cover it with anything, the skin would dry out, it will go quite hard. So we obviously want to preserve people in the best way possible. So wrapping them in a sheet, A, is for dignity, but B, it just helps keep them as fresh as possible.
So then the coroner may come back to you and say, yes, I'd like you to conduct a post-mortem. What happens then?
Once we receive that instruction from the coroner, on the day of their post-mortem, they're removed from the fridge, transferred into our post-mortem suite, and then they'll go through the full post-mortem examination process. So that includes an external examination. We will then do the internal examination of the patient. And then following all of that, we reconstruct the patient and then recover them. And then, yeah, they're sent back to the fridge until we receive, again, further instruction from the coroner about, is there anything else they need or can the patient be released to go to funeral?
And what point do the families come to you?
Any point. We can get families come straight from the ward when somebody's passed away. They could literally be following the ambulance to the hospital and the patient passes away on the back of the ambulance. So they're instructed to go to our emergency department and we'll do a viewing straight away on them. They'll come before the post-mortem, they'll come after the post-mortem. We have to be careful sometimes with the circumstances as to when families actually come. If the patient's got significant injuries, it might be that we have to hold the family off until a post-mortem's taken place and we can actually reconstruct their family member in a way that would mean they can be seen by them.
So quite a lot of your work is also about presenting bodies back to families in a way that they will recognise them. And I can imagine that's very challenging if you've had a traumatic injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's been the most challenging case you've had to work on?
There's been some sort of unique circumstances that we've we've done for families, but they're usually when we're not able to actually physically present the patient to them. We had a patient who'd passed away and had been at home for a significant period of time before he actually arrived with us because of his condition. What we did do was set up for the family to come and spend time in the room with him, but he was completely covered. So they, I think, felt connected to him, but without actually having the trauma of seeing him the way he was.
Do families ever ask you to take care of their relatives in a particular way when they're with you?
Yeah, so we've had families ask for particular music to be played for the post-mortem. We've had families ask that something is left in their hands. It might be something like a rosary, or it might be a lock of hair. Or
what does the viewing suite look like? When a family come in to see you, what's the process? Where are they taken?
So we have a small waiting room that's got a water fountain in it. It's a little area where we can have a chat with the family about what they're going to see. It gives the family an opportunity to ask us any questions that they might have regarding the deceased. For a lot of families, it's the first time they've actually dealt with a death, so they do generally have quite a few questions. We can also talk them through if there's any injuries to the patient or if the patient looks different in any way to what they might expect. And then we have the main viewing room off that. So the patient's laid out on a bed with a pillow under their head. It's quite different to what people imagine from what they've seen on TV, where it's just a fridge and, you know, the patient's pulled out and is this your relative? It's not like that at all. We've tried to make it as homely as possible rather than a cold clinical environment. We don't always stay with them, so we generally give them some time on their own. People don't often feel comfortable grieving in front of strangers. And there's things they might want to say to the patient that they don't want to say in front of other people. So it gives them a nice bit of time to maybe have that conversation that they weren't able to have before.
And how long are they usually in for?
It can vary. Some families literally just want a few minutes just to see their loved one. Some families, if we could facilitate it, they would stay for days.
Do you see, as they come back repeatedly, are you able to see the grief change?
Some families you do, you can see they'll come a few times and then you can see it in themselves that they'll say, right, this is enough now, I'm ready. Some families take a lot longer. Sometimes some people come and see their relatives, the harder they find it to let go, because then they always look forward to the next day when they can see them again. And there has to come a natural point where it stops and they have to let that person go completely.
How do you manage those families?
We just have to take quite an honest approach with them. Normally, we will go in and talk to them. Sometimes it takes a lot of encouragement for people to leave, and we just have to manage that as best we can.
What about children? Do you follow any different procedures when you look after a child?
We will dress children more than we will adults. You know, they might have a special blanket that they want keeping with them, or a teddy in a certain spot. They might want their hair a certain way, or in some cases, they don't want their hair touching. Maybe their kiddie never brushed their hair, so they like it to stay messy, whereas our natural thing is to go along and comb it because we want them to look neat and tidy and cared for. But actually, if that child's never brushed their hair, then that could be completely alien to the family. So obviously, if you've got, you know, a three-month-old baby, to put them on an adult-sized bed would look awful. So we generally have smaller pediatric beds. If they all fit in a Moses basket, we'll pop them in a Moses basket. We've even got sort of neonatal-sized Moses baskets that we can put our really small little ones in. And some charities have very kindly donated us sort of crocheted blankets and outfits and things that we can pop the little ones in, because you can't get those anywhere else. You can't go to the supermarket and buy something for a 24-week-old fetus to wear.
I can imagine for some patients, whilst they understand the need for a post-mortem, the thought of a post-mortem happening for a child or even a baby must be very confronting.
So I think for little ones, it's done very much in the same way that it is for an adult. The incisions are generally the same. We spend a lot of time suturing our little ones. We generally use a silk string. Normally it's a see-through one as well, so you wouldn't even see the stitches. You can't see the string that we use. I always dress my patients after they've had an invasive procedure. So all of our little ones get a fresh nappy and they're dressed, whether that's in clothing that their parents have provided or something that we've got in our store that's been gifted to us from, again, charities. If they've got their own clothes and they're soiled in any way, we'll wash them and we'll put them in something of ours, and then we'll either release that to the funeral director, or if the family want to come back and see little one, we'll redress them in their clean clothes.
So you'll wash the soiled clothes in the mortuary so that you can put them back on clean for the family to see the baby in?
Yeah. I have a thing about keeping their soiled nappy, if they're wearing one, with them as well. Like, I'll never throw it away, because it's small things like that that can mean a lot to a family member, like to a parent, if their little ones had that first bowel movement. As strange as it can sound, that can be a massive thing to a family. So I will always keep that nappy with them. Everything that generally comes with a baby stays with a baby. If anything, more stuff gets added. We generally keep our paediatrics quite close to us. We like to have them sort of within sight, really. I don't know if it's just the idea of watching over kids.
What would be your advice to a family about viewing a relative?
I think go in with an open mind. Don't be afraid to sort of, if you want to touch them, it's okay, you know, it's okay to cry in front of people. We sometimes come out crying from dealing with families, and there's no right or wrong way to do it. You know, I think sometimes there's a pressure on people when they go to see a loved one that they have to then see that person. I've got no problem if someone turns around to me and says, actually, I've changed my mind, I don't want to. People can force themselves to do things that they don't necessarily actually want to do, but there's the pressure to do it.
How do you prepare yourself for the emotional impact of dealing with a family like that?
It's not easy. You kind of have to put your sort of head game on. And I generally think of things that I'm going to say to the family before I actually get to that point. You try and preempt questions that they're going to ask. But you can guarantee that if you preempt it, they're going to ask something that you've not thought of at all.
Give me an example.
I think the worst thing is that people think we're going to chop their relative up into little pieces. They think they're frozen. They think that after the post-mortem, they're going to look completely different, when actually 90% of the time they look better. It's questions along those sort of lines that baffle you a little bit.
You're sort of correcting a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, we tend to do that a lot. I think people think mortuaries are really dark and dingy, cold, horrible places, and actually, you know, full of quite weird staff. And we are all a little bit weird in our own way, but, you know, we're very approachable. We're very down to earth. A lot of us have been through similar experiences to the people that are coming in.
Talk to me about how you got into this work.
I've kind of had a fascination with death and dying all my life, really. I've experienced quite a few losses at quite an early age.
So you've always been comfortable with death?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
And how did you get comfortable?
I think when you've been through it a few times, it kind of takes some of the fear out of it. So my mum died when I was 21, and she was the one who I watched pass away. She'd been poorly for quite a long time, and she'd always been quite open with us that she was going to die at some point. And we'd always talked about it as a sort of small family, me and my sister. And up until that point, I think I was quite frightened of dying because it was such an unknown. But actually, it was quite a peaceful situation. And I think that helped take away a lot of the fear of what, you know, what happens, and that it can be a frightening thing. You know, it's quite peaceful most of the time to actually watch somebody go.
Did that experience of losing your mother so young give you an added level of empathy for the families that you deal with?
Definitely, yeah. I think if you haven't really dealt with death and then you're sort of trying to help someone with their grieving process, it can be really difficult if you've not got your own skills to draw on. You know, there's some quite tragic circumstances we come across. I mean, to every family, every death is tragic. Some just come with extra circumstances that can make it all the more tragic.
Are there any deaths that affect you more than others?
Probably. I tend to find people my own age a bother. I think it sort of gives you a sense of your own mortality. Yeah, people my own age just sort of give me that wake-up call that, you know, your time isn't guaranteed and it can come at any moment.
What are the cases when you leave this work? Do you think that you'll take with you? Who are the patients you'll remember?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said I'd remember every single one of them, but I think all of them have taught me something, even if it's just a little bit of extra skill because they were particularly complex to work on. I had a family request that there was no incision visible on the chest of the patient. So we did the post-mortem from the back, and it was amazing to know that we can adapt our work to fulfill those sort of requests. I'm going to sound really weird now, but I love it when we've got a patient who has got quite extensive injuries and we can repair them in a way that means their family can come and say goodbye. It might be that up until that point we've had to say no, hold off until we've had chance to work on them. And then when you do get that family come in and they can see their relative, that's everything. You know that what you've done that day has meant that person can say goodbye.
So when was the last time you cried?
The only time I really remember crying was after I showed a grandfather in to identify his young grandchild. And he was really quiet and strong until he opened that door. And it all became a massive reality for him, and it was too much.
You're really watching heartbreak.
Yeah.
I read recently a colleague of yours talking about her discomfort with the fact that people refer to the people who come into your realm as bodies.
Oh, I hate it.
Why?
All through their stay in the hospital, they're referred to as a patient. And then as soon as they die, it's a body. Yeah, they're right in a sense. You read the definition of a body, then yes. But then everybody's a body. I think it's a real bugbear. You know, those of us that work in the mortuary environment that, you know, you get somebody come to the door and it's, oh, I've come to see a body. And actually, you've been caring for that person for 3-4 weeks and now suddenly they're just a body to you, you know. It doesn't take much to call them a patient still.
You're custodians, aren't you, really?
Yeah, we're there to care for the deceased. We're their advocate because there's nobody else in that environment to do it for them, and they can't do it for themselves anymore.
So what has this taught you about life, doing this job?
That it's short and you shouldn't take it for granted. I won't go to bed on an argument. I always tell people I love them straight away because you just don't know when your time's up.
So how do you decompress?
I've got two very silly dogs at home. They are my decompression, definitely. If you've had a bad day, they cheer you up in a second. So yeah, definitely them. My partner will hate me for saying that.
I was talking with Anita, an APT, working in an English hospital. And if you'd like to know more about her work, then check out the website of her professional association, aaptuk.org. And if you have a suggestion for a topic for a future episode or just want to offer some feedback, then do get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at deadhonesttalk or on my website, deadhonest.com.